Greetings, adventurers. Today we're excited to introduce you to a new story, Dark Dice, a horror podcast that blurs the line between actual play and audio drama, where the story is determined by the roll of the dice. Six adventurers embark on a journey into the ruinous domain of the Nameless God. They will never be the same again. One of the players is not what they seem after a doppelganger, a creature that can assume the form and voice of whatever it kills, infiltrates the team. As the players are picked off and replaced one at a time, can they figure out who the monster is before it's too late? Can you? Here's a quick example of what our show sounds like.
The shambler with the jar of liquid inside of him.
Soren Arkwright let loose an arrow that cracked the glass, passing through the spine of the creature. The shambler still managed to maintain its forward momentum, but stumbled as it eagerly tried to bite and swipe at Soren, landing near his feet.
As Jeff Goldblum has now joined our cast, Dark Dice is available however you listen to podcasts.
Greetings, Nightmare listeners. We wanted to take the time to let you know that our sponsor this month is Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, publisher of John Joseph Adams' books, the new science fiction and fantasy imprint from Nightmare's editor. The imprint will begin publishing in earnest in 2017, but debuted last month with three pre-launch titles. Already available is Beacon 23 by Hugh Howey, and two other Hugh Howey novels, Shift and Dust, will also be released on March 22nd. Then in spring 2017, look for Bannerless by Carrie Vaughn, a novel in which an investigator must discover the truth behind a mysterious death in a world where small communities struggle to maintain a ravaged civilization decades after environmental and economic collapse. To learn more, visit johnjosephadamsbooks.com. Also news about Skyboat Media, the most respected independent audio production team on the West Coast, who produces the stories for this podcast. On their website at skyboatmedia.com, be sure to check out the latest blog entry about Skyboats, Star Trek Harlan Ellison Kickstarter, where you can get a free ebook from Lightspeed Magazine when you join the campaign. But don't delay, because the Kickstarter campaign ends on Friday the 18th at 5 p.m. And before we go, a big congratulations to Nightmare Magazine author Alyssa Wong, who has been nominated for a Nebula Award for her story, Hungry Daughters of Starving Mothers. Now, on to the rest of the podcast. Welcome to the Nightmare Magazine Story Podcast. I'm your host, Jack Kincaid. Nightmare Magazine is edited by John Joseph Adams and Wendy Wagner. The stories of this podcast are produced by Skyboat Media, helmed by Stefan Rudnicki and Gabrielle DeCure, in association with Jim Freund. Our next offering for the March issue is The Modern Lady's Letter Writer by Sandra McDonald. The story is read for you by Gabrielle DeCure. The Modern Lady's Letter Writer is copyright 2016 by Sandra McDonald. Sandra McDonald's first collection of fiction, Diana Comet and Other Improbable Stories, was a booklist editor's choice, an American Library Association Over the Rainbow book, and winner of a Lambda Literary Award. She writes adult and young adult books with gay, transgender, and asexual characters, including the collection Drag Queen Astronaut, The Thriller City of Soldiers as Sam Burke, and the award-winning Fisher Key Adventures as Sam Cameron. Her short fiction has appeared in Asimov Science Fiction, The Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction, Lightspeed, Clark's World, Strange Horizons, and many other magazines and anthologies. After serving in the U.S. Navy, she earned an MFA in creative writing from the University of Southern Maine and currently teaches college writing in Florida. Visit her at www.sandramcdonald.com and on Twitter at Sandra McDonald. And so ends this week's intro. So without further ado, let's have a nightmare.
The Modern Lady's Letter Writer by Sandra McDonald. Dear Susie, there are customary ways to begin a letter and to end it, to address the envelope and set it to post. We have delivered to you, while you slept so prettily, your pale face a serene oval in the moonlight, this polite and improving manual of letters for the fair sex. We know you will be grateful. Do be aware that some correspondences may involve vows of fealty, freshly spilled blood, supernatural appeals to divine beings, and sacrifices of unusual scope. A modern lady avoids squeamishness about such matters, and we expect you to do the same. Swat away the black fly that has appeared by your ear and pay attention to our advice. Firstly, the address of the writer should appear in the top right-hand corner of the letter with a road number, if available. If the house has a name, insert that first. Phillips Hall, 194 Angel Street, Providence. A formal date will include the day, month, and year, as well as lunar phase, last quarter, and pertinent zodiacal information, Venus in retrograde. Among friends, the day alone will suffice. If the passing of time is blurred in your mind, a brief description of the weather is standard: dreary gray, pummeling rain, pea soup fog. Next, we find the salutation. For business letters, the standard phrase is Dear Sir, Dear Madam. Dear Madam includes married women, single women, spinster aunts, lonely widows, and certain women kept in close proximity by men of power. Dear Miss is never acceptable. Christian names can be safely used among friends as they would in conversation. Dear Edgar. Older men writing to younger men sometimes address by surname. Dear Hawthorne. You should not have written to the neighbor's son as you did, Susie. Luckily, we intercepted the note and set it afire in his fingers. The usual endings to letters are yours faithfully, business, or yours sincerely, informal, prefaced by the phrase, I remain, for more formality. The closing, your most humble and obedient servant, is expected when writing to any member of the clergy or government. The intimate closing, yours ever, is reserved for intimate relationships of which you are not allowed. Women should indicate their title, Miss or Mrs., with a small signature. Married women take their husband's initials, and men may always add in titles or distinctions. Women do not have titles or distinctions. The model letters we've provided should not be copied slavishly, but emulated for their style and brevity. By assimilating their grace, you too will be able to express yourself with good intention and freedom. Samples that might be particularly useful in the decades to come include a lady accepting a proposal, from a mother to her daughter's fiancé concerning a proposal, breaking off a proposal, to a friend on the sudden illness of her parents, accepting a proposal formally rejected, congratulations on a wedding, to a lady on the birth of a live son, to a lady with condolences on the hospitalization of her husband, from a lady to her parents, accepting an invitation to return home destitute, to the superintendent of the luggage department concerning lost luggage. It would be thoughtless of us to assume your spelling is equal to that of a gentleman, as your scholarship has often been interrupted by the duty of caring for others. Be aware that often a word will include letters that are not pronounced, as 1. U is written but not pronounced in disguise, plague, and guilt. 2. B is written but not pronounced in womb and tomb. 3. H is written but not pronounced in schism and scheme. 4. G is written but not pronounced in deign, confine, and malign. The English language has 9 parts of speech: noun, pronoun, verb, participle, adverb, conjunction, interjection, preposition, and entreaty. We do not use gendered words, as some inferior languages do, but we do utilize separate words to distinguish differences in sex: mother and father, master and dame, Milter and Spawner, Stag and Hind, Whoremonger and Whore, Sloven and Slut. In the tea rooms of Providence, the town matrons already murmur at least one of those names about you, don't they? You know why. To prevent confusion or obscurity, written discourse uses four stops as intervals: the comma, semicolon, colon, and period, or full stop. The comma is the shortest pause and distinguishes the conjunct members of a sentence, as in, "Oh, sing unto Dagon, comma, for he is merciful and long-suffering." A semicolon is a longer pause, often used in distinguishing nouns of a contrary signification. Quote, sacrifices private, semicolon, sacrifices public, semicolon, sacrifices sacred and profane. A colon is used before a comparative conjunction in a similitude. Colon. We don't understand that either. A period is the greatest of pauses and indicates an end to a thought, idea, or lifetime. Your mother is calling out from her bed, Susie, but she can wait. Your father is in his study, anxiously tallying the numbers of his fluctuating fortune. His pipe has gone cold, his tea tepid. Meanwhile, let us review capital letters. They, too, can be used to communicate efficiently. Let the proper names of gods, planets, sacrificial holidays, winds, and persons be distinguished by capitals. Write not a capital in the middle of words. Help, H-E, capital L-P-M-E, small m, capital E. Do use capitals for any substantive in a sentence to make it more remarkable. Our capital friends who live under the dark waters. To express something extraordinary, use full capitals across the sentence. Our Lord Cthulhu has risen. We see your gaze wandering, Susie. Your hands rest demurely in your lap, but your attention is shifted to the open bedroom window and the frayed green curtains hanging around it like shrouds. Several dark flies hover at the sill. In the yard below, your father's one cow is chewing on thin grass. Here, on the edge of Providence, the bucolic greenery of summer is interrupted only by the buzzing insects, the occasional barking dog, and clacking horse-drawn wagons along the dusty road. You are no doubt thinking of the neighbor's boy, with his strong arms and pleasant face. Your familiarity with him gives us no small concern, as his father is unequal to yours in fortune and character. But today wouldn't be the first day you climb out a window to grab a few moments of pleasure. The headmaster dismissed you from boarding school in Massachusetts because of impropriety with a stable hand, and your mother took to bed for several months under the weight of shame. Now would be a fine time to discuss standard phrasing, which helps smooth the intercourse of mankind by softening the rough edges of honest opinions. The sample letters contain several useful passages to adopt when you might otherwise write with a blunt or thoughtless pen. For instance, when we said "no small concern," clearly we meant enormous worry about your virginity. When we said unequal to yours in fortune and character, we meant that his father is a heavy and foul-mouthed drinker teetering on bankruptcy. To express his anger, he frequently beats his children with willow switches. If you were to remove the shirt of the boy you admire, a most improper action, we note, you would find crisscross scars across his back. No matter how his skin splits or bleeds, he has learned to make no sounds of pain. Clearly, his father's fiscal irresponsibility is a shame. When we said impropriety with a stable hand, we meant how you let him slide his hands down the curve of your shoulder to the clothed globes of your firm young breasts, how you arched toward him as a moth toward a lamp, and how easily a flame can burn. Remember that men are the milters, and women the spawners. Susie, are you truly ready to spawn? We have decided no. When writing to your superiors, be not prolix or pompous. Avoid omitting letters, should spelled S-H-O-U apostrophe D versus should with an L, W-O-U apostrophe D versus would with an L. Be perspicuous. If you don't know what perspicuous means, who among us is surprised? Your parents awarded you the great privilege of school. In return, you hiked up your skirts in a sunlit horse stall to let that stable hand caress the creamy skin of your legs. We watched from the shadows, digging our claws in the dirt in dismay, as you surrendered to transitory joys instead of your academics. Thanks to an incident with a spooked horse, that mangled hand will never molest a young lady again, but you don't know that yet. You can thank us later. When writing to your inferiors, be not too free or familiar with your style. This will only make you contemptible. Do not use the fine quarto paper due to your superiors. Less expensive paper will suffice. For writing to very high superiors, a parchment of human skin conveys great respect. Including a bit of your own skin shows humility and deference. Your mother is calling again. Your sisters have gone to town, and your little brother is playing in the dim attic among the books. You should stir yourself to see to mother's needs, then tend to father as well. After all, a good daughter is dutiful, responsible, and attentive. She makes herself of service to others. She reads to improve herself, and strives at all times to be sober, decent, and proper. But we know your wild, impulsive nature, Susie. We see the fire in your veins. You're rising from your writing desk and moving toward the sill, one hand fisting your skirt to lift it high, the other shooing away the thickening flies and bracing yourself against the frame. You think that in the arms of the neighbor's boy, you will be cherished and treasured. You want to taste his affection and rest your head against his strong chest, pretending that he can protect you from the vagaries of fate and loneliness. However, he is not the one destined for you. We have chosen a commercial traveler named Lovecraft, whose path will cross yours more than a dozen years hence. He will give you a son, and that son will one day pen marvelous tales of our glory and magnificence. His eloquence will win the hearts of the millions we have yet to subjugate in the lands beyond Providence and the United States of Azatoth. We wish you to name him Howard. We promise he will be worth the wait. If you come impure to Lovecraft's bed, however, only unpleasantness will result. Your husband will die of madness and disease. Your father's fortune will diminish. Your son will pen our tales, but he will hide himself from the sun, from his public, and from the hearts of others. You will spend your own last days in a sanitarium, your high nature broken by regret and loneliness. Step back from the window, Susie. Let us embrace you instead. Butler Hospital, Providence, Rhode Island, May 23rd, 1921. Dear Howard, forgive my brevity and shaky hand, for the pain is very great today, and the nurse refuses me more of anything to dull its bite. This is the last letter I will ever pen. When we meet again, it will be in the land of immortal peace and unmolested joy at the feet of our great lords. In a great paradise of sunlit willow trees, I will behold their majesty with tears of happiness, and there I will be reunited with my dear parents again. Among my belongings, you will find a complete book of letter writing and instructions on language. Use it to carry on your own correspondences in the years to come. Remember to always put the old ones first in your heart and your prayers, for they reserve great care and concern for our well-being. They are at this very moment reading these words and commenting on the unfamiliar reader whose gaze has fallen on them. Are you devout, dear reader? Are you pure of heart and intention? For that is the only path to happiness, and all other trails lead to tears. The winged creatures are coming now, Howard. They will lift me through the window to the world to come. I die perfectly and remain perfectly yours. Found unsigned in the empty hospital room of Mrs. Winfield Lovecraft, a widow.
Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the story. Please consider making a stop at our website at nightmare-magazine.com. If you'd like to help spread the word about the Nightmare Magazine podcast, find us on iTunes and leave a review or rating there. Nightmare Magazine is published by John Joseph Adams. If you haven't already subscribed, check out our many options at nightmare-magazine.com/subscribe. The stories of this podcast are produced by Skyboat Media, the most respected independent audio production team on the West Coast. They are headed by the Audie and Grammy award-winning narrators Stefan Rudnicki and Gabrielle DeCure. You can check out Skyboat Media's website at skyboatmedia.com. Post-production is in association with Jim Freund. Music and sound logos are composed and performed by yours truly, Jack Kincaid. There's other ways you can be notified of new Nightmare Magazine content. You can subscribe to our free monthly newsletter or RSS feed, follow us on Twitter, or like our fan page on Facebook. If you visit nightmare-magazine.com and click on this month's editorial, you'll find links to all of our social media pages. This podcast is copyright 2016 by Nightmare Magazine. Thanks for joining us. Sleep tight.
Every 5 minutes, a transplant candidate dies while waiting for a compatible heart, liver, or kidney. Imagine a technology that could provide those life-saving transplant organs for a high price, and imagine what a company would do to monopolize that technology. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists unlocks this holy grail of medicine by reverse engineering the genomes of all mammals, creating an animal with organs perfectly suitable for human transplantation. They envisioned a docile herd animal, but one team member had another, darker vision. This ancestor is anything but docile. The team's work spawns something big, something evil, something very, very hungry. Ancestor is a complete serialized fiction podcast by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler, with all episodes available. Binge the entire story now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.